Welcome all sports fans. On this podcast,
no sport is left behind.
I'm Justin Williams.
I'm Cabrera Duran, and this is our brother from Down Under.
Me, Wallace Bruce.
We are the Pro Sports Podcasters.
Filling you in on the latest news from the world of sports.
On this episode, we discuss the world of auto racing with NASCAR Camping World Series truck driver Jesse Iwuji. And then our auto racing expert, Matt, and I discuss the world of simulation racing, which is just beginning to take off. So let's get right into it.
So tell us, what made you want to get into racing?
For me, getting into racing, it wasn't something that I thought of when I was a kid. You know, when I was growing up, originally I'm from Dallas, Texas. Both of my parents had immigrated from Nigeria to the U.S. Back in the 80s before having me and my two brothers and my sister in Dallas. You know, for those who know anything about Texas, Texas is, you know, football, God and football. That's it.
That's right.
Yep. So growing up there, I naturally gravitated towards football. And then in high school, I had big aspirations of, you know, eventually making the varsity team and starting on the varsity team and then eventually getting off to college and playing college football. So I worked really hard in high school to get better and better and better, because when I first started football, it really wasn't that great. But as I progressed, I got better. And then going into my junior, senior year, I was playing a lot more. And then eventually I started getting recruited by some schools. Now, one of those schools that was recruiting me was the Naval Academy. And I just looked at that as a really good opportunity to go to a really good school, get a really good education, play for a great team. And then when I graduate, be able to serve as an officer in the United States Navy. So I took this opportunity, went to Naval Academy, played there for 4 years, graduated in 2010. I became a surface warfare officer. And as a SWO in the Navy, I was on the ships and I was deploying. You know, I had went over to the Arabian Gulf a couple times. I spent probably 15 months in the Middle East. And in between the deployments, in between the underways, during my free time, I was taking my personal cars to local tracks near me. I was going to drag strips. I was going to road course tracks. And I was just doing open track days, which are, you know, things that anyone can do. And after a few years of that, I just made this crazy decision that after my second deployment, when I was going to be coming home and basically spend the next few years in the Navy on land, I was like, you know what? I'm going to have some more spare time. I'll have some more free time. Why not try to pursue professional racing? I like cars. I like going fast on track. I've been doing it for a few years. Why not go after this pro goal? And that's when I made my decision. I pulled my whiteboard off my wall and I wrote it really big on there. And that was where the journey began in 2015.
Awesome. Yeah, I've seen the photos of you in action behind the wheel. You're a fan of the Nissans, right? I see you in a Nissan model sometimes.
Yeah, so I am. I'm a more of a Chevy guy at heart. But yes, I do have a Nissan Skyline R32 GTR. And I actually just picked that up about a year and some change ago. But yeah, I love the GTRs. They're awesome. Beautiful cars, wonderful cars, and the name and the brand. So really love those cars. But I love a lot of other cars too. You know, I'm a fan of just sports cars in general.
Awesome.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, when you said personal cars, what cars were you actually racing at the track?
Yeah, so my first time going to any sort of track to drive on was back actually at the academy when I was at the Naval Academy. I went to a drag strip in Crofton, Maryland, and it was Capital Raceway. And I had a V6 Chrysler 300 at that time, so it wasn't fast at all. Yeah, I think 250 horsepower max, you know. So I took it to a drag strip. I think I went 15.9 or 15.8 or something like that in a quarter mile. So it was really slow, 15-second car, almost a 16-second car. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to come back eventually with a faster car and do way better than this. So when I graduated from the academy, I bought a Dodge Challenger SRT8.
Nice.
And that thing at that time was, you know, pushing like 425 horsepower. I took it to a drag strip literally 4 days after I purchased the vehicle. And I ended up going like 13s and a quarter mile. So I was like, oh man, it's so much better. But I was like, it's not fast enough. I want to be faster. So I began putting a lot of money into the car so I could get it faster. And eventually got it to the point where it was a low 10-second car. So
nice.
I was like, okay, now it's really, really fast. And then when I started going to road course tracks, I actually I had bought a Corvette Z06 and I started taking that to road course tracks, because the Challenger was great and all, but it was a big heavy car and it really wasn't that great at handling, so I needed something more nimble, and the Corvette Z06 was definitely the way to go.
Yeah, Challenger is definitely a straight line car, whereas the Corvette's got the, I mean, it's like 1.0 on the grid or whatever. It's an amazing car for handling.
Yeah, yeah, it can take a lot of G's.
I'm a Mopar guy, so I can respect the Challenger. I can respect that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. The Challenger was a beast. I had a built 408 cubic inch motor with a 4.2 liter Kenny Bell supercharger, built transmission, built everything. The car was built from front to back.
Right on, right on. I'm going to take it away from racing for a second and go to football. Quick question first, Longhorns or Aggies?
Longhorns all day.
okay. And I looked in you played free safety.
Yeah. So I played free safety in high school and then played a little bit of outside linebacker my senior year in high school. When I got out to college, my first year I was a corner, then moved into the safety role. I played free safety in Rover pretty much the rest of my college career.
Okay. And I'm assuming you're a Cowboys fan.
Oh, yeah. Cowboys. We're winning the Super Bowl this year. You just wait.
It's pretty optimistic.
hey, we can dream.
Yeah. I got to say, my favorite player actually in NFL history is a free safety. It's Steve Atwater, actually.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like Darren Woodson or something. But
no,
nice.
Atwater. I'm a Broncos fan too, right? So.
Yeah, no, he was pretty good. He's pretty good.
Yeah, just sticking with the theme of football and cornerbacks, I noticed that there's actually a prospect from Navy. I don't know if you keep up with the boys from the football program at Navy, but his name's Cameron Kinley. Are you aware of him? He's in this year's draft?
I am not, no.
No worries. But do you follow the Navy program at all, or do you still keep in touch with some of the guys in the program?
Yeah, I definitely follow it. I wouldn't say I'm like hardcore, you know, every single week looking at every single stat. But yes, I'm usually checking in to check on, you know, if they ended up winning the game or not. And then when I get the opportunity to actually watch the game, I'll watch it. But a lot of times, you know, when they're playing, I'm either racing or, you know, out and about wherever I'm at in the world, doing all the stuff I'm doing. But I usually, during football season, every Sunday or Monday, I'm always looking back, or even on Saturday, I'm looking back at the scores for the day to figure out, okay, did they win? Okay, they did win. Yes, great.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I guess they always have a special place in your heart. Now, take our listeners through a recent race that you had. If I understand it correctly, you were selected, but because of the logistics, you weren't able to get over to California. So you had a team set you up in a location on the East Coast to race. Talk us through that.
Yeah. So, you know, NASCAR, we obviously race in real life, but we also do sim racing too. And ever since last year with the COVID pandemic, there were a lot of different things that changed in just the world of sports, and esports began to grow a lot. Even though it was already growing, it fast forwarded it quite a bit. So this past week, NASCAR did a fan vote where fans could vote one of their favorite non-NASCAR Cup Series driver into the NASCAR Cup Series sim race event that they were doing on iRacing on national TV. So for me, I'm racing in the NASCAR Truck Series and a little bit in the NASCAR Xfinity Series, but I'm not a NASCAR Cup Series driver yet. So I was one of the people eligible to be voted into this race. And the fans ended up voting me in over a lot of other, you know, great drivers. And it was a huge honor to see that the fans liked me that much to vote me in. So when they did, I happened to be on the East Coast at that time, and I live in Southern California. So my racing simulator at home is here at home, but it wasn't on the East Coast. So we had to pull a lot of strings. My agent, Matt Castro, worked really hard to connect with the right folks to get a simulator from Richmond, Virginia to the Naval Academy. And we got to actually put the simulator at the Naval Academy because the superintendent there just basically moved heaven and earth to make this happen because he knew how big this was. He knew how great this would be as far as media-wise attention for the Academy and everything. And it ended up working out really, really well. Fox Sports One came there. They brought a camera. They were recording the whole thing there live as I was racing. It was such a cool experience and cool environment, and definitely awesome that the Navy was behind me on this one.
For sure. That's awesome.
Yeah, so you kind of got started late when it comes to getting yourself into NASCAR. Significantly late. I mean, the traditional route would be go-karts to begin with when it comes right down to it.
Yeah.
So how did you find yourself kind of advance through the ranks that quickly to now, I believe you're on the Camping World Truck Series, correct?
Yeah, so right now I'm racing in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. And yeah, most drivers start off in go-karts, you know, when they're 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. And then from there, they progress into the different levels of racing that you progress up the ladder until you're eventually racing in full-size cars. And for me, I didn't start racing when I was a kid. So I had to start past the whole karting level. I just basically jumped into a late model stock car. And then from there into the NASCAR K&N series, and then the ARCA series, and then now the NASCAR Truck Series. And, you know, it's definitely not a normal way of doing it, but I didn't have a choice because I was starting at age 27 when everyone I was racing against started 20 years prior to me.
That's right.
So, you know, it was definitely difficult. I don't come from a racing family. I don't come from a wealthy family. You know, for those who know anything about racing, it just costs money. It costs money to race. It's not cheap. Tires aren't free. Fuel isn't free. Race cars aren't free. People aren't free. You know, it's just, yeah, it costs money. So I had to figure out ways to get the funding. Like, I had to be creative. I had to be innovative. I had to basically become an entrepreneur to find ways to find the extra money to pay for all this stuff. And eventually I was able to land sponsorship deals and all that stuff. But it took a while before I got to a point where I was able to land, you know, enough sponsorship each year to help pay for a lot of stuff. So it's definitely been a journey, definitely been hard. But I think any journey you take in life when you're trying to achieve something bigger than where you're at, you know, the higher you want to go, the deeper you're going to have to dig.
Yeah, understandable. It's crazy how fast you've advanced through the ranks, considering, you know, how late you started. So I found that very impressive. Very impressive. Now, one other thing I really wanted to ask you when it comes to stock car racing, and this is something that people always wonder about, but how stock is a stock car?
There's nothing stock about it. There is not a single, thing. Stock cars are not stock at all. There's not a single bolt on that stock. But, you know, it got its roots from originally when stock car racing started. They were like factory stock cars. You would basically buy them off the showroom floor, you know, maybe do some safety modifications to them, maybe add a cage, add a few little things, maybe take some weight out of it. But for the most part, it was still an OEM vehicle. And then after a while, NASCAR figured out that, hey, we got to find some way to somewhat make these things spec in a way where, you know, everyone kind of has a similar chassis and this and that, because, you know, there was all these different ways of getting racing advantages that didn't make it completely fair. Yeah. If we just let people just grab whatever vehicle, because, you know, if you just let people grab whatever vehicles, then why can't I just go, you know, bring a Bugatti Veyron, you know, and race against somebody in their Chevy Camaro.
That's right.
You know?
So who's the genius behind your stock car?
I've had a few geniuses. You know, the team I race for, Rayum Brothers Racing, I would say we have a committee of crew chiefs. You know, they kind of jump from truck to truck to truck, so it's not always the same.
Okay.
You know, 1 week I'll have one guy, 1 week I'll have another guy. It's just always, you know, it changes because I don't race full time with the team. I race part time because that's all sponsorship driven. The more sponsorship I have, the more times I race. So we kind of have a committee. But eventually when I race full time, eventually I'll have one crew chief and I'll deal with one guy all the time.
Now, I'm going to switch things up a little bit here, ask a little bit about your heritage. So you have dual citizenship with Nigeria, correct?
Oh, no, it's not dual.
It's not?
Have dual. Yeah, the government did not want me to have that.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm in the military and I have...
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's just okay. Little things that cause some conflict. So that's not something I have.
Okay, understandable. But are you a fan of MMA at all?
Yeah, I like MMA. I watch a little bit of it, and I'm seeing my Nigerian brethren and West Africans
kicking
ass. It's pretty cool to see that they've jumped into that sport. It's something that I always thought they would do, especially even boxing and just MMA, all that stuff. And we have some fighters, and we have some very strong and aggressive people.
Yes.
So it was only a matter of time before someone was going to decide, you know what, I'm going to go try that.
Yeah.
Nia, I know you got a related question.
Oh, I do. So, Jesse, we might be fighting soon, but anyway. Are you a fan of jollof rice?
I am. It depends on who makes it. Obviously, my mom makes the best, you know, but, you know.
That's, oh, yeah, sure, I get it. But have you tried, I got Ghanaian heritage, so I got to ask. Mm-hmm. Have you tried Ghanaian jollof rice?
I haven't, because honestly, it probably can't really hold a candle up to
stop
the Nigerian
it. Stop one. It. Right. No, you stop that talk right now. You get out of here with that. Get out. Awesome. Stop it. Can't hold a candle. No, I'm a big fan of jollof rice, and for our listeners, Ghanaian jollof is the supreme jollof. So just want to let everyone know that.
It's the difference between, I don't know, maybe, you know, going to, you know, I don't know, Walmart versus Whole Foods, you know? I mean, it's just, you know, there's just differences. We got the better stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we can't all be perfect, but an angel off is where it's at.
I knew you were going to go there. I knew it.
It's a constant battle. The battle will be here for centuries.
That's right. I mean, we can have world peace or whatever, but there'll always be the jollof wars. That will never be solved.
Oh my gosh, the jollof wars. That could be like a cooking show or like a cooking a food festival called the Jollof Wars. You know, where all the countries bring their own version. That would actually be pretty cool.
Yeah, because I had a Senegalese mate tell me about his jollof. Is like, yo, no, this is Nigerian Ghana. You stand down. Nah. I got to ask a question about your position that you played in college. You played free safety. I guess that's kind of like the center fielder role that you're all seeing over the defense. How important do you think that position is becoming in today's NFL especially?
Yeah, safety is very important because, yeah, you see all, you are the end-all, be-all. If anybody gets past you, it's over. I mean, it's over. So I think safeties are very, very important because they kind of run the defense. I know a lot of people back in the day used to think, no, linebackers, they're the center, they're the heart of the defense. Yeah, back in the day when it was this run game, middle linebacker was huge. But nowadays, where everything is just changing, we're just in a different dynamic. Safeties, they run it because they see the whole field. They're making calls. They're playing the run. They're playing the pass. I mean, when you have a really, really solid safety, your defense, I mean, it is on point. It's hard for a quarterback to play against a very good safety because that safety, when the good, is literally sideline to sideline.
Yeah.
Right. No doubt about it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you if you felt the simulator experience is, like, how bang on is it with the real thing?
Simulator is very, very similar. The dynamics, the movement of the vehicles, you know, how they react with the tires on the track, how they react against near other vehicles, you know, just how they react as far as like when tires wear, you know, all that stuff is very, very similar to real life. So it helps teach you and craft your ability so that when you get on the track, you actually feel like you've been doing it over and over. So that's why I get on my simulator and I get hundreds of laps in every single week before I even get to a track.
But would you say the top driver in real life would be the top driver in a simulator, or is it a different kind of mindset?
It is a different kind of mindset because usually the top drivers in real life aren't really that great at the simulator because you have to switch your mind around a little bit when you get in the sim, because in the sim, you're not feeling things through your body. You're not feeling the race car through your body. So sometimes it's hard for drivers, really, really good drivers who have only been driving and never been on the sim. It's hard for them to get used to that. They get on the sim and it's just way different and they just sometimes can't figure it out. Whereas people who maybe grew up on sim and then went to driving real life, a lot of times, you know, if they're really, really good on sim, it'll translate to real life. Doesn't mean that if you're the best on the sim, you're going to be the best on real life, but you'll be good. There's a lot of things you can learn, but it is two different mindsets you got to be in. It's just like for boxing, you know, there's a big difference between sparring and actually getting out there and being in a full-on match.
Okay. And is there like a standard simulator in the market? Like, is there one that everyone uses, or is there a number of different options?
There isn't really any standard one because there's a lot of different ways. It's still like the wild, wild west right now.
Okay.
You know, right now, it's hard to even find a website that has everything you need all in one place. It's just really tough. But that's a problem that we're trying to solve right now with eRacing Association, is to become that marketplace where we're just a one-stop shop where you can come get all your sim racing gear and get it all in one place and have different packages, different levels of sim that you can purchase that are in different price ranges that fit whatever you need as a sim racer.
And is there real money on the e-racing side of?
Oh, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Yes. I mean, just
it's
our
entirely different market, correct? Because it's not like you're a rolling billboard. right? You're playing in a simulator.
You are on a simulator, but you are a rolling billboard, because when the races get broadcasted, whether it's on TV or through, you know, Twitch or YouTube or Facebook, it's just like real life. It looks like a real life broadcast. You can see the sponsors on the race cars, because you're really allowed to, you can create custom livery on the race cars that are being broadcasted, so that people who are watching this broadcast of these sim races, which there are millions of people who watch this stuff, they see these sponsors on there. So it's just like real life. The only difference is, on the sim, when you crash, you can, there's a reset button and not going to get hurt.
That's right. So are any of the real big sponsors involved on the e-racing side?
There is, you know, you have Coca-Cola with the eNASCAR series. You have other big brands that are becoming part of it. Even with eRacing Association, we have EPM, which is Equity Prime Mortgage. You know, they're a sponsor of eRacing Association's Omega Cup Series races. There's a lot of big companies getting in on this stuff. I mean, you see esports teams now raising, you know, $10 million, $50 million, $100 million in venture capitalist funds for their esports teams and players and stuff like that, just because esports is really growing. It is the new thing. Even the Olympics now has esports in it.
Wow.
They just launched it. Esports will now be part of the Olympics. I mean, that just shows you right there that esports is here to stay.
And I know you got limited time, but what's your end goal? Where do you want to take this to?
My end goal in life is, one, to be racing full time in the NASCAR Cup Series and eventually be fighting for wins and fighting for championships.
Okay.
After that, I want to be in Hollywood on big time films. I would love to be part of the whole Marvel comic universe.
Nice.
Yeah, I would love to be a superhero in some form. And then, you know, be in some other big blockbuster films. I love Fast and the Furious. I love Transformers. I love all that big stuff. So anyway, I can submit myself in that world. That would be awesome. Also on the entrepreneurship side, I have a few companies right now, and I would like to just continue to grow them between my trucking company, my real estate investing company, my drag racing events, and all the other stuff I do, esports. You know, I want to grow it all. And also I'm going to have my own race team, you know, so that's another part of things. So I have a lot of different things that, are in the pot right now that's cooking. You know, eventually everything will blossom to where I really want it to be. It's just going to take a lot of work, effort, and grind.
Nice. Motivated, buddy. Motivated.
That's awesome. I like that. There we have it. Jesse Awuji. You can find him on Instagram at Jesse_IWUJI. He is a Navy commander, Lieutenant commander, NASCAR racer, NASCAR e-racer, and a fan of Nigel Joloff. We appreciate your time, Jesse.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, buddy. Good talking to you.
You too. Take care.
Take it easy. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to join the Pro Sports Podcasters Facebook group, where you will be able to interact with the hosts and talk to other sports fans. Now back to the show.
So I'm with Matt, our auto racing expert, and we're going to talk a little bit about the simulation side of racing. This is something that he's sort of got a unique perspective on, because he himself has invested in a full-out simulation racing system. And the topic came up when we were talking with Jesse Awuji earlier this week, and I thought I'd get in a little more detail from Matt as to what it's all about, especially because it's going to be kind of highlighted in this year's Tokyo Olympics, provided the Olympics do go on. But they've chosen five different sports to show the simulation side of things, and sim racing is one of them. First of all, what do you think about the inclusion of sim racing as potentially an Olympic event?
That's quite a step. It's also very unique for them to actually adapt to something like sim racing, or sim anything, really, because the Olympics involves actual movements and trajectories and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's going to have to be one of those, we're going to have to see it for the first time and see how well it turns out, or see if it completely bombs and tell them, don't do that again, please.
Yeah, it can go both ways, especially. And then in this case, I mean, you and I talked a bit about the popular simulation forums that are out there, simulation software that's out there, but they're actually going to use Gran Turismo Sport. And again, it's probably because it's Japanese-developed game on a Japanese-developed platform at Olympics in Japan. So it's not the best simulation software by far, but it's just really for demonstration purposes. So c'est la vie, right? We'll see how it goes. Although I would have liked to have seen something like iRacing instead, because that's what F1 has used. That's what NASCAR has used. So it's, to me, sort of a standard at this point. I know it's not what you prefer to use. You use Assetto Corsa, correct?
Yeah, yes, I do. So to touch on a few quick things there. With iRacing, they probably don't want to use it because you've got to pay for it.
Okay.
iRacing literally is very dollar bill, dollar bill, dollar bill. Like, you got to pay for your car, you got to pay for the tracks you want to use, then you've got your annual payment, right? So if you've got iRacing where, I'm sure there'll be sponsors paying for stuff too. Like, I'm sure they would have done that.
Yeah, yeah.
If iRacing was the actual one to use.
Yeah.
But yeah, that monetary part is, it can kind of hurt you a little bit. Especially if you pay for something for an entire year and then you really don't play it as much just because of life and stuff like that.
So you're saying a set of course that's one of those, it's one time payment, then you're on the platform.
You get the game, and you just log in and you're good to go.
There's no additional pay to play.
I mean, they might come out with a couple tracks, but you pay for the tracks once.
Yeah.
They're not really like overly expensive or anything. And you go and you have fun.
Okay.
So.
Okay,
basically a DLC like all the other stuff.
Yeah, and so as of right now, this is such a new thing. Of course, esports is not new. Esports is blowing up. But the actual sim racing side of it is still very new. And I looked into what is required to count as a simulation system. And basically, it's a force feedback wheel. It's pedals and a shifter if required. And some sort of a comfortable anchored seat so that you're not just, you know, sliding around, you're in control basically. And that's kind of like all that's required to be considered a simulation system. But some of these simulation systems go way beyond that.
Yep.
Now, your system actually includes motion.
Yeah. So my system is a ProSimU T1003M. It's a lot. But, basically, it has two actuators in the front that will give me, they would say like the X and Y axis, but basically it gives me the up and down motion or a slight tilt to the side, whether left or right. And then the third actuator is actually under my seat that gives me what they call the yaw, or you can feel basically your tail end kind of spinning out. So if you're going in a turn and you're going either maybe a little too sharp, like you've got oversteer or something, and you feel the back end go, you actually feel your bum slightly going to the right.
Yeah.
And your body's waking up saying, no, 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 that's not right. Fix your, like, steering, your braking, whatever, and try and keep it on the road kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's the force feedback wheelbase, and that one's by Fanatec. Pretty popular one. Then I have a separate steering wheel. Then I have a shifter that can go from gears 1 through 6. With the reverse, or it can be the sequential shift.
Okay.
So it can convert to one or the other.
This is a stick shift?
Yes.
So not paddles?
The steering wheel came with paddles. Most steering wheels will come with paddles.
Yeah.
Just because of there's either like GT races or there's F1 races, and almost every steering wheel is going to come with paddles.
Yeah.
So if this was maybe 20 years ago, they might have been there, or it's like something extra you'd have to purchase.
So I'm looking at a bunch of different steering wheels that are available here. You've got the classic Logitech G29, and they've had those out for years. I remember using one of those, I think, with a PlayStation 2 or something like that, a version of it.
Great Christmas gift for a kid.
Right? They got the different Thrustmasters that have been around for forever as well. I remember selling some of the original Thrustmaster wheels when I worked in friggin' Radio Shack. So that's how long ago that was.
Yeah.
But then also I see some of these, like something like this one. So there's a Fanatec Podium. This is a $2,200 wheel. So what are you getting with the Fanatec Podium that you're not getting with a Thrustmaster or a Logitech?
Most likely quality. And then with the steering wheel that comes with it.
Yeah.
You're going to get realistic functions and buttons as if you were in like an actual car.
Oh, you're saying like the layout would be very similar to, say, a real F1 car?
Basically, depending on what kind of wheel it looks like. There are some wheels, you can get GT wheels that are very, like, very similar. Also, with some of these wheels, some people may not know this, when you do spend the extra money, you can actually take that wheel off and put it on a real car.
Oh, seriously? Because
the steering hub has like a dislodging, kind of like a disc or something like that, where you can interchange. If you have a steering wheel that can collect data, then you can actually take that off your actual race car and then put that on a sim and then depending on how your system's set up.
Yeah.
And actually transfer it to your sim.
Okay, so if you're a professional driver, that's a huge advantage.
Yeah.
That's worth the price of admission, basically.
Yeah, pretty much, man.
Yeah, right? Because it's a massive jump in cost. Like, I see the most expensive Thrustmaster they have here is $550, and then you jump up to $2,200 for the Fanatec. So it's a significant jump. But yeah, if you're able to dislodge that wheel and then use it in your actual vehicle and use the same buttons and such, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Right? That's getting as close to the real thing as you can. Speaking of which, I want to ask you, because I know you've done some, like, hobby-style racing. I know you've done go-kart. I know you've done, like, what is it, just sport car, basically?
Anything that had four wheels, I was trying to be involved.
Yeah, some street racing. Not you personally, but I know you know people who've street raced.
Yeah.
I just want to ask you, how close to the real thing is your simulator? The fact that you've got the full motion, right, the actuator system and all that, you have the force feedback wheel. I know you have, like, a very capable computer tower and such to actually run all the programs and such. How close does it get to real for you?
So it always comes down to depending on what type of game you're operating. And then with the motion sim, it depends on what kind of, it's called a plugin, or basically the setup for your rig to work with that game. And depending on how they set it up, sometimes they may only program the two actuators, which could be the two at the front, but not the one under your seat. Which is kind of like a slight disadvantage because you paid for the thing. So you were kind of hoping that, you know.
Yeah. You want software that actually utilizes the whole thing.
Right. Personally, I run Assetto Corsa, the first one. And because that game's been out for a while, they've been able to like update and upgrade the software for that one several times over. But to the point now where, for example, if you go on the Nordschleifer in the game and you're on a motion sim, you're going to feel absolutely everything. If there's a dent in the road because a car way back when, say like in the 90s or something, was epic and people remember it,
yeah,
they will put that in there. And if you drive over it, you'll kind of feel it. If you know what I mean? If it's there.
Hyper-realistic, basically.
It's crazy, man. You feel the little rumbles. You feel some of the bumps. If you're on a certain side of the road, it might be smoother than the other side because everyone's taking this. Say if it's on a turn, you take the inside, it may actually feel smoother. But if you take the outside, you might actually feel like slight little rumbles because it's not used as much, which is fantastic, which is great.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what you're kind of looking for when you get a motion sim. Like you want to be able to feel and you want to be able to actually learn from it too.
Yeah. So like, if you were to give it a percentage, what percentage would you give it?
That one, I would give a 70, a pretty strong 70.
That's crazy. That's pretty close to the real thing.
Yeah, because when you're actually into it, like your brain is working so hard to make sure your car doesn't slide, doesn't skid.
Yeah.
When you're going up one of the hills or down one of the hills, especially when it turns, you don't want to lose the balance of your car. So as the motion sim is telling you and showing you that, like, you know, your seat's going to raise a little bit or your seat's going to dip, like, to your front left.
Yeah.
Because you're going downhill and making a left or something. Like, it's fantastic. And it's very close.
So, does it accurately simulate the downforce? Do you feel like you're going to lift off at times or no?
Yeah, depending on what race car you pick.
Really?
You can actually feel your seat kick back a little bit as it's flowing through the gears. Which is kind of cool. So... And especially if you use, like, a manual car. So, let's say, for example, the BMW E30, the old retro one. When you use a stick shift version on it, as you're plugging through the gears, if you're pushing hard, you will not only see the car in the game kind of lift because you're taking off and it's rear wheel, the seat will also do the same thing. So, it's like, you know.
Feel like it.
Yeah. And if you screw up, it'll tell you that, too.
So, like, something I'm looking at is right now they don't really have standardized system for who, like, what you can use as far as sim racing goes, and they're trying to get a little more professional about it as it goes along. I know that they've put together a almost like an organization to start setting standards. Now, it's funny, Jesse Awuji had mentioned that he felt people who like the current generation of drivers that maybe used sims when they first came out and then got good in a simulator were then better on the track. It helped them improve. But for the previous generation of drivers or someone who's been driving for a long time and never really went the sim route, it's very difficult for them to go from the real car back to a simulator. They find it more difficult to do that. Does that make sense to you?
That makes a lot of sense. Let's start with the first one where you're going from a sim to the real thing. That's a bonus. It's basically like you're training. You know, instead of being in a real car and you crash it and then you got to wait a couple weeks for the repairs to be done and whatever,
yes,
you can literally sit in a chair and hopefully if it's motion, get the entire feel and you know what to expect. You get the muscle memory of how certain turns feel, how early or how late you have to brake in certain corners, and depending on your tires too.
Yeah.
Which makes a huge difference. And then transferring that into a real car, you're halfway there. You know, okay, you have some competency. Now, to go from a car to a sim, and especially if you haven't really done sims that often, it's almost like you would have to treat it as like an arcade. Like when you go to the movies and you got to wait for your movie and then you go play in the arcades and then there's like,
yeah,
you know, Cruising USA or something like that. You almost have to treat it like that because your actual skill that you've done all your life or at the current time, you don't want to taint it by trying to focus really hard on something that's not fully there.
Yeah, okay.
So even as a quick one, Lewis Hamilton said in his recent race as he was interviewed that he doesn't like using The Sims at all.
At all.
Where he tried it for 20 minutes and he just couldn't do it. He didn't like it. It could have ruined his mojo technically.
Yeah.
Because if he had a bad race and he's like, oh, I'm going to go to The Sims, there's a part of his brain that's thinking of the sim and how the sim reacts when he needs to focus more on the actual car, the real life.
Yes.
I need that podium.
Yeah.
Right? So going from sim to car, cool. Going from car to sim, that can get tricky depending on how serious you take it.
Yeah, and for someone who's maybe thought about getting into racing and aspired to someday actually race, the sim route is now an opportunity that is quickly becoming a real thing, where instead of spending ridiculous amount of money on building a car, going to these tracks, these events and such, all of that maintenance, all the gas, everything, the time, all that's required, you can literally just put a high quality simulation system in your basement and follow the same sort of route that you would, only in the comfort of your own home, at a fraction of the cost.
Yeah.
But it looks to me like you're going to have the same sort of competition available to you very shortly.
Yeah. Like in those situations, you can adjust the level of difficulty, or if you just need to practice and kind of like transfer the muscle memory where you can take the lap as slow as you need to.
Yeah.
In a practice, right? Like there's no one there saying, you know, you got to warm up the tires, you got to do this, you got to whatever. But almost like taking a stroll, like on a Sunday drive or something, literally on a track in your sim, and you can like actually look at things as opposed to just gunning it through. You can actually look around. Like you can even see where there's pre-tire marks before rumble strips.
Yeah.
Right? Or maybe some cars always go off on a certain part of the track and you may not even notice, but in a sim, you can actually pick up on that and go slower and look at it and be like, oh, okay, maybe I can go this far when I take that turn. You know, where... I mean, you can kind of do that in real life too, but then time is money.
That's so, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you have the freedom of just doing it any way you want to do it.
Right.
No, that's a good point, actually, because, yeah, in real life, that's not really a luxury that most people have.
Unless you own the track and you live there.
Yeah.
Then that's a huge plus.
You own the team. We had that conversation before. Lance Stroll.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. His dad's actually selling that track in Montreal.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Waiting on my lottery ticket. Maybe I'll go get it.
That's a winner.